I haven't podcasted in a little while. It's Sherry. I've been so busy lately. School and home projects. School is going great. I'm finishing up a class on object-oriented programming. And I gotta say, it's the class is not very clear. It does not make object-oriented programming desirable. Some of it's okay, you know, defining how databases work and what's important in looking at software systems, but nothing too specific about programming and object-oriented designs and how to declare objects, call objects, and the purpose for changing or adding on a particular programming new way of doing things to gather records rather than just using a Microsoft system and building that in using .NET software or something else or PHP or another programming language. So anyways, rather than just totally picking it apart, I was able to just hold my ground and disagree with the author on a lot of things. Because when you have a class on object-oriented programming, you should probably talk about the programming principles behind it, its origins, why it's different, what it brings to the field of technology that's different from what we're used to seeing on the back end and the front end, and who created it, what's it about, and what's the methodologies behind it. And that just wasn't there. So it's a crappy book, Systems Analysis and Design, an Object-Oriented Approach with UML, Unified Messaging Language, I don't know. Systems Analysis and Design, that works, you know, that's understandable. You go through the requirements phase, you look at processes. But some of the things that they have you doing is creating these collaboration cards and identifying people and putting them into classes, what they call classes, which in basic database terminology, we just call them fields. But instead, they're using sort of educational terminology, classes, in this programming style language. Which sort of makes sense if you're doing social stratification projects and developing systems for various classes of people. Or if you're classifying things rather than categorizing. Or if you just want to create something totally different and you come up with this term and it has no correlation to the real world and what a class means and what it means to have class. Or to do things with classifications. If you can't relate it back to the original term, then it's really just misleading Americans and the population, not even just Americans, everyone, right? So that's been the biggest thing, is you guys need to speak English. And if you don't speak English and you're creating these software systems to program and create software, because you do need software to create software. Kind of funny. Sort of like the concept of you need money to make money. And you don't need class to be classy. Although it helps, right? But the point I'm trying to make is, if you're going to go create this new programming language with new processes, practices, and procedures with standard documentation on how that system works and how you define requirements and how you group and categorize information that is queried in a field and how that's displayed or recalled on a form or a page and stored in databases, then I think you should stick with the standard terminology, standard sets, and try not to veer off too far out in the left field. Otherwise, you end up way outside of the stadium and you can't speak to the ball players or the spectators who you're actually programming for. So you become so separated from the general population because you veered off on your own set of odd terminology that doesn't really match the real world. A class is a class. I went to a class today. I went to class today and completed my homework or listened to a lecture or read my homework and completed the essay questions. I don't, you know, in virtual learning, we don't actually go to the classroom. We log into the classroom. It's a virtual classroom, but it's still class. Even though, you know, you might not be directly sitting across the computer at the same time that I am, and you're not delivering a lecture, it's still a class. So in object-oriented programming, they call it classes and a few other terms that they use to group and categorize. So if I have a class of students, the students are student number or student ID number, their name, first and last. Maybe their gender, male, female, transvestite, whatever. Whatever they call them, that's politically correct and acceptable. But those are, you know, and the class would be, you know, where are they at in the program? They've completed two classes, three classes, their transfer. You know, that's how you collect data, and that's how in the real world, in the world of what makes sense, it's pretty cut and dry. It's clear. So we don't have to declare a field and put all those data points in a field suddenly and create these database fields suddenly. Because when you develop a system, you take your time out and you think about what data is to be captured, collected, and what data changes over time and how it relates to other data. So if I'm a student at Aspen University and I live in Virginia, the state of Virginia, there might be other students in the state of Virginia, thus it being a field that's used more than one time because there's more than one student in that location. So it reduces duplication by having a list of states so that it's only entered one time, although it is entered on each record. But you can easily group those people by who are the students in the state of Virginia from Aspen University. And those aren't data fields that you simply input one time and dump it after you've used it, right? After you queried it, declare an object and put that data in there, and then it appears on the screen and you never need it again. No, that data is ongoing. That's lifetime data. How did she do in this course? You know, that's the problem in technology, is that mindset of, oh, we're just going to use it and then we're going to throw it away. Or the hoarding idea of we're going to store everything and keep everything forever and build these gigantic servers and just completely destroy the United States or the world because we're document and information hoarders. And we don't know how to collect summaries and counts and create computational systems that count how many classes, how many words, how much, and evaluate text, right? Saying, yes, that was correct. Not just beyond right and wrong, but valuable in terms of monumental and valuable in industry and creating change that can actually be used and applied in the field of technology. I'm sure I could say that a better way, but for now, that's, you know, So the idea of object-oriented program, declare an object and put a bunch of data variables in there, and then it shows on the screen, and then we're done. No, that's not how that works, actually. In fact, that's just like answering questions, collecting data of the moment, and dumping it and moving on. So you don't really have any record of anything. And that's bad business. That's bad business. And the reason that's bad business is now you don't have a running record of anything unless I go re-enter everything and set up a structure and architecture that saves, archives, calculates, recalls, and carries cumulative information. I don't like that word cumulative, but it is a word, but carries ongoing information of your progression in class or whatever that data, those data points you are collecting. So your budget at the beginning of the month started off with $500. At the middle of the month, you got down to $150, and you went from the middle of the month a week later, and now you have zero. And that changes every month because your spending habits change. But looking at data from more than just one data point, how much money did you spend? How much did you have at the beginning of the month and how much do you have at the end of the month? That's not really insightful. What's more insightful is what are the categories? How are you spending that money? Are you obsessed with hand sanitizers? Air fresheners? Did you purchase duplicates over and over that you didn't realize that you had on hand? So seeing those data patterns beyond just how much money at the beginning and how much money at the end is important. But also, you know, people get out of control in trying to control and provide too much oversight and make demands on how you spend your money, where you spend your money, how it's categorized and classified, and what those kind of data systems are used for, you know? So, like, I think the important thing in systems analysis and design is creating something that is helpful, automated, but doesn't lock you into this unnatural, inhumane box of control and limitation because, you know, things weren't taken into consideration, or you're just a bunch of numbers on a page, you know? So anyways, interesting, very, very interesting class. It's almost over. Like I said, I disagree with it mainly because of the terminology. It just doesn't match real life. And the standard systems analysis and design approach is to look at what the current system does. And even if you don't view a system as not just a computer, but I have a filing system or I have a process and a system for which I organize my office, I start with this and then I do that, or how I clean my office on a routine basis. It's considered a system, even though it's not in the computer. And this manual system doesn't always match the computer system because it works differently and efficiencies are gained and processes change. So that's where systems analysis and design is really important, because you have to look at both processes and say, okay, this changes because of this, and this is now more efficient, and you like this. Or you might not like it in the beginning, but you can grow to like it because you see and understand the benefit of that change, and you just have to break a bad habit, or you have to get used to it. So, yeah. Some of the diagrams, like what they call a CRC card, it's a class responsibility collaboration card. So the UML, the structural modeling of this programming, wants you to put things in certain
collaboration classes, like in a diagram, write down who talks to who and collaborates with what. Now that's a bit tough to do in the beginning, right? Because you don't know everything when you first go in. So you just sort of need to look at everything from a data perspective and go, what's being collected right now? And then you have to look at the organization as a whole and say, okay, so this office is also doing that. It's not Sally and John. Sally and John collaborate. It's not receptionist A and administrative assistant one or two that has to talk to each other to get this data flowing. That's not how technology works. So collaboration cards is just the wrong term. Collaboration is working together in a team to come up with something. You work together on a project or an idea. That's collaboration. There's no reason to have cards for that, to come up and design a system. That's ridiculousness. Go create a name card. Get to know each other. When you're ready to design and develop real IT systems, then we'll talk. But right now, this is garbage. Responsibilities and collaboration. My responsibilities outside of what I do at the IT system are plentiful, vast, and varied. And each desk can be figured out. And much of the stuff can be automated and changed or improved and made more efficient. But that doesn't happen in documented collaboration cards. It takes an expert or even just a person who understands business and how different things and data overlap and how process efficiencies occur and can look at policy, process, and change and go, okay, this could be made easier and better if we use this system for that. And that reduces the other department's burden for printing 8,500 copies of that, because now we're just going to have that in a summarized system, viewable on screen in a number format, rather than 85 pages where the executive or the manager only really wants to see the bottom line or doesn't even need to see everything printed. Because that's a waste. Because you can now put everything on screen in a PDF, save it if we have to be audited and we want to see a rolling account and record of information. And that stuff is still necessary and valuable. And even more valuable is the ability to summarize weekly, biweekly, monthly, quarterly, annually, and not have 800,000 pages of names or dates, but to group that and present data in different ways with just some programming of some fields. So count the day between this day and that day. If I was to do that manually for 80,000 records, I'd be a busy girl. It would take me probably 25 times as long as the computer. And I know people get frustrated because they say, oh, well, you don't need me anymore because I'm the one that manually counts those pieces of paper. And I calculate the percentage. Well, of course we still need you. We still need you to verify that the computer's correct, that it looks good, that there's no more efficiencies that can be gained from that process, and then open your mind to other things that need help and improvement that can be used in another way or presented in another way to change business, to make it better, more efficient, faster, more organized, prettier, and look at data in different ways. So rather than counting pieces of paper, now you have an analytical mind that can compare numbers. Create forecasts, estimates. and look at overall summaries, and rather than just counting a bunch of pieces of paper where you click the box over and over and over and over and over and over and over on the same box every time and count the same number of pieces of paper every time and put your stamp of approval on it every time. That's what the computer's for. And thank God we have them. But it takes a smart programmer and not someone to come along and say, object-oriented programming is the way to go. You need to put these, classify these objects, declare an object and put it in this field, and then it moves over to this screen and it dumps into that report. We need something a little more business savvy that says, not just in a use case or a business case, but an overall business report that says we collect performance reports on all of our employees. And those reports are based upon attendance, punctuality, cleanliness in appearance, respectfulness, or I don't know, conflict awareness. And then efficiency in your actual job, what your actual job is. So, which is to collect a paper application and then enter that into the system. How fast can you do that? What's your standard rate on a daily basis where you're not pressed for time, where you feel like you're sweating bullets because you did 150 data entry applications yesterday and you only did 5 today. So now your job is at risk because some idiot came along and set up a metric that said, if you don't meet this quota of data entry and the same rate as your baseline, then your performance is declined. When they don't really understand that, well, that's not my fault because, there were 100 applications that one day because we had a project going on. So computers have the ability to see that and factor those in, and good programmers do as well. So collaboration cards is so minuscule in terms of designing a system where metrics and numbers and counts and efficiencies are analyzed for process improvement and employee performance. You can't say that responsibilities of a class can be broken down into two separate types, knowing and doing. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. That's like an idiot years ago. There's a difference, like the difference between teaching and doing. Those who can't do, teach. What? I mean, that's just ridiculously making up excuses and slighting both communities. So you're saying a person who actually works on this as an end user on this computer system every day and creates advertising campaigns, knows less than the person that teaches it? Possibly. It's a different function. So they're apples and oranges. So you can't even say that there's only two different classes in that, in responsibility. Because they even sometimes have the responsibility of teaching, the ones who actually develop campaigns. They might have to teach the person that is they just hired as a marketing assistant. So maybe they don't hold the same credential as the instructor that teaches the class. But guess what? There is no instructor that teaches the marketing class for Google advertising. Because it's basic technology and it's basic understanding of how marketing and advertising works and your ability to search out the answers. And Google's inability to be direct and clear in how those numbers and all those data fields work together and how they actually change based upon real financial information of online e-commerce sales and not some wild-ass chart that says, you pay me for this keyword, I'll put you number one for X number of days, but then I'm going to increase the price because it's now competitive. Someone else wants to use that keyword, so now I'm going to charge you more, and I'm going to make you to compete for that word. That's ridiculous. The whole concept is kind of ridiculous, but it sort of makes sense. I mean, how else are they going to manage placement on search results? There are a lot of other ways, actually. Give the customer and the inquirer what they're looking for, something closely related. And if you want to push advertisements that are somewhat related to what that customer is looking for, or maybe what they're not looking for but could use, you got to do it smartly. And to do that, you have to know the customer and know what they have, what they don't have, what they need, and what they want. So I don't need you marketing and advertising a bulk logo or t-shirt printing company to me, because I have no need to print t-shirts in bulk and have them embroidered. Your advertising dollars are a waste of their time and mine. I mean, it sort of helps with word of mouth referrals, but there are so many better ways to do things. And with technology, we have that power, but they're just not using it correctly. They're just not using it correctly. At least not yet. They'll get there. I'm certain they will. All right. Have a good day. Almost 30 minutes. Oh, guess what? I have an announcement to make. I'm buying a car tomorrow. I found a classic car, and it's not like a total 1964 sport drag racing car, but it is a classic car. And it needs paint. It needs all sorts of things. So I'm going to have fun restoring it over time. And it's going to be one of those projects that I'm not going to put on a timeline and push myself to get it to the paint shop and get some wheels and tires put on it and get the engine cleaned and all the fluids changed out real quick so that it runs great and it gets on the road because I need to drive somewhere every day. It's going to be something I do entirely myself, and except for some of the mechanical things that I cannot do, which that will be over time. But it runs. It's the body is not damaged at all. It's got a little bit of rust, but I know how to remove that. And I'm actually going to paint it and reupholster it myself. I can't wait. I'm really excited. So that's why I love the internet and YouTube, because I looked at a ton of videos on this car just to try to get to know the engine, the car's history, just different colors, different wheel types, wheels and rims, and just looking at it and just envisioning my future with the car. So the current dilemma on it is, what color am I going to paint it? I don't know. Pink or black? Maybe red. I don't know. I'm stuck. I'll get it figured out, though. You guys have a nice day.